Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menash. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Norfolk, Virginia. Welcome to the show, Richard Crouch.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Well, great to have you here. Now, Richard, you work for a business law firm based in Richmond and Norfolk, Virginia. And I'm keen to have this conversation because there's a lot that's going on in the marketplace today where projects are not necessarily going the way that they were planned. But before we do, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how we got to this point in your journey.
Okay. I actually have been practicing transactional law for about a little bit more than 23 years. And I've actually seen a lot in that time frame. When I was first brought on, I was brought on to work for two guys that had a large book of business during the first real estate boom before the Great Recession, and probably got about 3 years worth of experience in that first year of practicing alone. But I've been primarily focusing on commercial real estate that entire time, and represent a lot of real estate acquisition firms, developers, and lenders as well. A good portion of our practice is also business formation and drafting organizational documents to really capture the intent of what parties are trying to get out of a certain deal. That's the bread and butter, I would say, in terms of our practice areas. We represent a lot of syndicators as well that are trying to basically properly document the deal and the terms of the deal going forward. So interest rates right now make it a little bit of a challenge, but we're managing to stay fairly busy, notwithstanding the seeming absence of a lot of financeability of a lot of projects. That's basically the space in which we play.
Love it. So you're not a securities lawyer. You're focusing more on the business structure. Do I have that right?
That is correct. That is correct. If we get deep into securities law, we certainly collaborate with partners of ours that specialize in securities, but we are able to draft the documentation such as private placement memoranda, as well as help parties document any exemptions that they're claiming with respect to safe harbors as well when they're basically raising equity. But that is, your summary is correct.
Okay. We're facing an environment right now where certainly a lot of projects that were initiated in 2019, 20, 21, with the rapid rise in interest rates have not necessarily gone the way that they were forecast to go. When that happens, what do syndicators do? What do investors do? Besides maybe just get mad at each other and start suing each other.
Right. And the one thing we recommend, because I think most attorneys would tell you that litigation, no one wins, really. Even if the judge gives you a piece of paper that says you won, oftentimes, particularly in a more sophisticated type of commercial litigation, such as an investor dispute, it's not uncommon that hundreds of thousands of dollars could be spent during the course of that. So obviously, being able to paper everything as comprehensively on the front end is ideal. Oftentimes that's easier than said than done for a lot of people because they're excited when the deal starts. Everything is sunshine and rainbows, and they're excited about how much money they're going to be making. There's maybe more trust and oversimplification than should occur, particularly for large sums of money. I mean, I think initial capital typically would be at least six figures on a lot of these more sizable deals. So it's definitely worth documenting what you do when things go wrong. And there basically are two avenues. I mean, there is the avenue of how do the investors get their money back if everything plays out as well as the pro forma suggests that it will. And so for that, yes, you'll have certain events that you need to clearly expressly say that whether it's for a sale or a refinance or a 1031, basically how the investors are going to get their money back during certain capital events. But to also have language saying that, okay, also from income, from operations, what's the hierarchy of distributions going to be? And is it clear? So if there's a preferred return coming, they usually will get paid first. If there's a subordinate return, they will usually get paid next. And then basically, how are things allocated from that point? As well as if you do have a capital event, it needs to be very clear as to how you get your capital back as well. So that's basically if things go seamlessly and as they should. But the one thing that we always suggest, and again, this is if things go sideways, is that you have a lot of mechanisms where if things don't go as planned, that investors can get out, or conversely, they can take over the project. So there will be certain trigger events that you'll see. It could be the death or disability or a bankruptcy filing of an investor or a syndicator. But oftentimes it may just be a simple desire to disassociate because the project's not going as well as planned. One mechanism you might see is there are mechanisms such as drag along rights, where a majority shareholder, or we usually use the nomenclature member, can basically compel the minority members to sell their interests. You have tag along rights, where basically the minority members can basically compel the sale of their interests as or the project. But I'd say probably what's the most common mechanism that we see is to have a buy sell arrangement. Sometimes you'll hear that referred to as a shotgun clause. And we have this in basically every operating agreement, even the most simple operating agreements that have multiple members in them. And this is something where you have a very clearly laid out process for how the membership interest is going to be valued, what that process is, what sort of notifications need to be given. And it'll be pretty common that the parties, really both the syndicators or the members themselves, are going to want to retain control over the project. So they're going to want to restrict the ability to sell membership interests outside of the company to third parties. So that'll be a pretty common thing to see. But there'll be certain mechanisms for when timing needs to be given, if certain rights are going to be exercised, like a right of first refusal to buy certain membership interests, and basically what the terms of those payments are going to be. And usually there's a predetermined process for determining the fair market value. Sometimes it can be as simple as an approved accountant that's familiar with the company making that valuation, or they can have a specified formula for how that's going to occur. There are other mechanisms that get even more complex, but it's usually good to have that laid out so there's no dispute as to how the fair market value is going to be determined.
If you think about it, I mean, from a, you know, these mechanisms are great, and in a rising tide, it lifts all boats and there's more than enough money to go around and everybody's happy. But in a falling tide, as we may be in right now, for example, in commercial real estate, in office, that's clearly the case. It ends up being a negotiation of who ultimately is the one taking the haircut. That's really what we're talking about, is it not?
That's quite true. And it's it is a double-edged sword, or can be, in that respect. Sometimes if there's certain things that are not clearly laid out in terms of how things are going to be calculated, we generally would also recommend that there be some sort of mediation or arbitration process associated with that valuation process, if there's something that's not clear, or if there's something where the circumstances have changed in such a way that it doesn't really make sense to use that specific calculation. Because sometimes, although you try to capture everything in a operating agreement or a private placement memoranda, sometimes you need to build in some flexibility without completely retrading the deal. So that's why we also recommend having some sort of alternative dispute resolution if there is a legitimate dispute that arises out of that whole valuation process.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about what's in the agreements versus what often happens in practice. And sometimes they don't necessarily match. And it's not that anything wrong has happened, but sometimes agreements are written more loosely, more broadly than what would happen in the real world. Is that, in your experience, a source of misunderstanding and disagreement?
Yes. And oftentimes what we'll see is if people try to cut costs on the front end and maybe download a form that they find on the internet, oftentimes they can look at a glance and it seems to, in their mind, capture what they want. But oftentimes there are a lot of ambiguities within that language. And there may be terms where it may even say basically the fair market value will be paid under the following terms, but they haven't really defined what fair market value is or what that process is. So it definitely is worthwhile for somebody to have an expert review those to make sure that all of the terms themselves are not overly vague and that everything is accurately defined, because it definitely avoids a lot of confusion down the road.
Now, some lawyers that I've had the misfortune of working with, and we don't use them anymore, are of the variety where they will, you know, review a set of documents and they'll make corrections, meaning they'll remove things that are objectionable, but they won't necessarily add the things that are missing. And I'm sure you've encountered those types of lawyers as well. Can you talk a little bit about your process that you use for drafting and for reviewing that avoids some of those, you know, less mature types of mistakes?
Yeah. Yeah, and I appreciate that. And it is very true. You have some attorneys that are they're very good drafters. Oftentimes their lens is a little bit too much through that of an ivory tower, and it doesn't always necessarily reflect the commercial realities of the deal. One of the number one things I would recommend to syndicators, investors, et cetera, is that the attorney that you use, that they have some involvement in investing in commercial real estate as well. It's one thing to simply draft it and say, okay, this is what we think it says, but they really need to understand the business as well. They need to understand the hierarchy of distributions under the waterfall and what it means. So that's one thing that I recommend. And I definitely, you need to have somebody who's also very, has a sense of the commercial realities as well, in terms of what the syndicator is trying to achieve and also formulating a budget with them. And so those are all very important things to do. But part of our process is, although we have certain bells and whistles, certain issues that we're accustomed to protecting our clients from, on a case-by-case basis, we'll talk to them about the specific deal and what their understanding of it is. And so that's one thing that will also basically shape any sort of drafting that we do, because much as you can take a form off the shelf and try to make it work, no two deals are necessarily exactly the same. And you really need to be able to reflect any specific nuances in your documentation and any unique quirks of that particular deal.
I love it. Well, Richard, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
I'll give you my email address. It's richard.crouch, and my last name is spelled C-R-O-U-C-H, at wrvblaw.com. And I'm happy to give you my mobile phone too, which is 757-353-0969.
Fantastic. Richard, love the perspective. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Richard Crouch at wrvblaw.com. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.